We are here. Welcome to this week's edition of the Pinch Hitter podcast. For those of you who've never joined us before, it's a bit like this week with Michael Portillo and Diane Abbott. But instead of those lovely people focusing on politics, myself and T. Rigger are focusing on cricket.
Hello.
But we literally rule nothing out. So it is Christmas Eve. Merry Christmas to all our listeners, all our global listeners out there. From myself and welcome to you, Terence.
Hello, Thomas. How are you? Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Season's greetings.
Are you the Michael Portillo of this operation, or is that me?
I'll go with the slime ball that was and is Michael Portillo, and you can be the honest Diane Abbott if you like.
Perfect. Yeah, and that's actually very fitting for those listeners that have tuned in before. Will know that my recall of statistics, cricket statistics, is prone to error and exaggeration. Happy to take on that mantle when talking about cricket statistics or London police figures.
I'm just happy to do all that. I guess what we are lacking, and this is a, you know, I guess we call it a Christmas appeal, a Christmas celebrity appeal even, is we are lacking an Andrew Neil to chair this all. So any Scots who like to give interviewees a tough time, please do apply within. So this is where we are. This is today's Pinch Hitter podcast. We're going to be focusing on we're going to dip into the Big Bash. We're going to climb into what England are up to in South Africa, as lots of things are doing nowadays. We're going to look back on the decade that was, the decade that is, the decade that's
with a bit of a twist.
With a bit of a twist, who'd have thought? And we will of course check in with our good friend Shane Warne, see what he's been up to, and keep just check in with him like we all should do with friends old and young, frail.
At
this Christmas time, absolutely.
Before we climb into all that, why don't you give us a quick rundown of? Well, you are the pinch hitter, but what the pinch hitter is, what
absolutely.
People can expect.
Yeah, absolutely.
Where we're coming from.
What I love to do. So the pinch hitter, for those of you who have somehow been hibernating since day one of the Cricket World Cup, Men's Cricket World Cup, I hasten to add, is a daily email which gives you everything you need as a cricket fan to get through that day. We call it the starting 11 for today's cricket. And so within it, you'll find all the results from yesterday, today's fixtures, some quirky bits of news, and of course, some trivia. So we have links in there. For example, today we've included a link to a fantastic tweet from Andrew Sampson yesterday, who highlighted that the final day's play in the Pakistan Sri Lanka Test match in Karachi is now one of only four days in Test cricket that had wickets but no runs. So we climb.
That is genuinely wonderful statistic.
It's
statting.
It's perfect.
Do we know what the other three were?
Oh, I've got them in front of me. I'd love to hear your thoughts, Trig.
My thoughts on them. Well, I have read today's pinch hitter, but
did
for the list,
link?
I did click on the link. Yes, I have. And will be clicking on the link in today's pinch hitter.
Excellent. So,
but for those of us that haven't clicked on the link, why don't you run us through?
Yeah, so it was 1937 when, of course, England lost two wickets and fell from 165 for eight to 165 all out, down at the G in good old Australia. In Georgetown, Australia went from 144 for 9 to 144 all out in 1965.
And then wouldn't it be Pakistan against Australia in Adelaide?
What year was that?
Would have been 1972, I would say.
Of course it was.
Yeah.
214 for 9 to 214 all out. Who took that wicket?
That would have been, I'm guessing, Tomo.
Tomo, yeah, and I don't know. So happy to leave that open for our listeners. Actually, maybe climb into that, do a little Google search and find out who took that wicket in 19. Did we say 72?
1972. It was.
It might have been.
I'm sure I can take a look at that while you talk to us about what a pinch hitter is, why we called it the pinch hitter, And what it is that we love about a pinch hitter batsman.
Well, for me, a pinch hitter became in vogue in the mid to late 90s, particularly during the 99 Cricket World Cup in England, which was a rip roaring success for the hosts. With the main high point being the official team song being released in the charts after England had been knocked out. And so the pinch hitter is essentially someone who gets promoted to the top of the order, could be temporarily or could be permanent, to tee off really, and to get the innings off to a good start. So you're talking of your Ridley Jacobs, your Gillies, your Adam Gilchrist, your Church. So it's someone who traditionally wouldn't open, but then goes and has a wham bam at the top of the order. So that's what the pinch hitter is. So the pinch hitter itself is that email which comes out the start of the day, sometimes even as early as 6 a.m, sometimes a little bit later at 8:45, but somewhere within there, so you can get that bash of cricket info first.
Get your day off to a good start.
Exactly.
Build an innings. Not an email that's going to sit there all day. Allow the rest of your emails to play around it.
No.
It's going to go out, get you off to the right start.
No, it's not there.
And then
to
come back tomorrow.
Absolutely. So that's where we are. Should we climb into a bit of Big Bash, Trigg?
Let's do it.
What's caught your eye this week?
So Chris Lynn has caught my eye this week.
Lynn
cementing his status as a genuine T20 great of the game. He teed off yesterday for the Heat against the Sixers, 94 off 37 balls.
Excellent.
35 balls. As they posted a mammoth 209 for four, which it goes one of two ways in a T20 game, doesn't it? When you see one of these amazing innings where it just 11 sixes flying all over the ground first up, and you just know that in all likelihood, the second innings is going to be a complete damp squib.
Not going to make it. Yeah.
And they're not going to make it. And it's going to become abundantly clear that they're not going to make it within about four or five overs. Is exactly the case here. But yeah, Chris Lynn went big time.
Just missed out on the fastest ever century record.
He did, yeah.
Who's got that record, Trigg?
In the Big Bash? Or in all T20 cricket?
Let's call it the Big Bash.
I don't know. Who has got it in the Big Bash?
I don't know. I don't know either. So one for us to climb into.
Another one.
Add it to the list.
He falls metres short of the fastest Big Bash century. That's one of his sixes dropped just inside the rope.
It was Craig Simmons, who in 2014 scored 102 off 41 balls. But
Who was in the Big Bash or in all T20 cricket?
I think the
Big Bash might have been the Klinger?
Craig Simmons. Well, I'm reading from the Sydney Morning Herald. So I don't know how reliable a publication.
Oh no, you're right. It was great. Yeah, I remember. I'm looking at it. I remember the game.
Good bloke, actually. You'd like him.
Yeah, very good bloke.
And Lynn came up devastatingly short again, according to the Sydney Morning Herald, getting out on 94 from 35 balls. If I remember rightly, was it Chris Lynn who threw his toys out the pram for not getting selected for Australia's ODI series against Pakistan?
Yes.
Earlier this Australian summer,
Was it this summer? He did have a bit of a tantrum at one point when he felt like he was getting kind of typecast as a T20 specialist.
Yeah.
When
he's just a white ball specialist.
When he's actually just a white ball, and also one of the most consistently devastating white ball batsmen going.
It was very good, but I have to say that. It's a bit like when who won the FA Cup in 1999-2000 when Man United hadn't entered.
That would have been the year that Chelsea beat Aston Villa in the final. I think.
Yeah, let's go with that. But it's a bit like that because Tom Banton had a virus, so he didn't play for Brisbane Heat in the game against the Sixers. So I think if Banton's not playing, then all all records, all big scores really should be off.
Yeah, the future of T20 cricket is essentially on hold until Tom Banton realizes his full potential and starts to rewrite the course of the game.
Absolutely.
Not just because he looks like the stick cricket batsman, but because he is equally talented.
Equally talented, very talented Englishman. And is he just going to be purely white ball? Are we going to get him in the test team and get him to open up against Pat Cummins and a really strong Australian attack and just ruin his red ball career at the same time? Or should we just let him be?
He's still so young. Is he 20? Is he 21 yet?
His face looks about 15.
Yeah, no, he looks. It reminds me very similar to what Joe Root looked like a few years ago. It looks like he's got to grow into his body. Mm. He looks like his bat looks too big for him. He looks like he's about to fall over every time he plays anything on the onside. It looks like he's about to go with his bat.
Yeah.
But he is so talented, isn't he, man? Keeps it's wicket great, as well. The Joss Butler, Kevin Parsons are there for all to see.
Absolutely.
Let's just let him be for the time being and hope that let's give him a whole. I'm looking forward to him having a whole season playing for Somerset in red ball cricket.
See where he goes.
And see where he goes. See where it can take him. I mean, he has got the lot. He reminds me of Alex Hales with that kind of languid style. He's got big long levers, carves anything kind of even vaguely pitched a little bit too short. Goes straight through the onside.
He just hammers it, doesn't it?
Nails everything.
He got a 50, didn't he? Brisbane Heat, or Banton Heat, as I prefer to call them, had lost their opening two games with Tom Banton playing. And he got out for 60s and the 70s, maybe, in the second game. But some of his hitting was, you know, second-tier sixes.
Yeah.
And that's just mad.
Yeah. It reminds me of Hales, the cleanness that he hits it with. When he just hits through the line of the ball. And he just makes such a good connection, doesn't he? You feel like someone like Joe Root, you never feel like the ball's going to stay hit.
No.
But he times it, Banton times it and puts such force through it as well that it really stays hit, doesn't it?
Just stays hit. And I always love that phrase.
Yeah, I know.
It stays hit.
It feels to me, it's one of those phrases that reminds me of, it's similar to bowls a heavy ball.
Yeah,
no one knows quite what it means.
Well, it means the ball is heavier,
it's completely accurate description of what's happening, despite no one quite knowing what it means.
No, absolutely. It would have been as if the commentators in South Africa a couple of years ago had said, "And in come Australia now bowling with a sandpapered ball," because that's exactly what happens.
And exactly what it was.
Exactly the same as, you know, bowling with a heavy ball. That's when you take a heavier ball out of your pocket. And bowl with it, and when you hit the ball and it stays hit, the ball stays hit. So
yeah, that ball has for the rest of time been hit,
and will stay
having been hit.
So there
and this
we are.
Listeners is a sort of quality content.
Always good to clear it up. So the Big Bash League currently stands with the Sydney Thunder at the top.
Yep,
three wins.
Who's starring for the Thunder?
For the Thunder, please.
Callum Ferguson, I think, is having a pretty Callum Ferguson's having a pretty good tournament.
Callum Ferguson having a very good tournament. Got man the match in the first game, if I remember rightly.
Yeah.
So let's move on from there, because clearly a huge amount of knowledge.
I can keep going if you want.
Keep going, yeah. Tell us more.
Alex Hales has had a pretty exceptional tournament.
Yep.
It started off very well. Man of match in the second game, and then bowlers wise, not a huge amount from them. But Chris Morris is doing his job. One of my favourite T20 players.
Good bloke.
Runs in, bowls, dibbly-dobbly, seam up, and then absolutely crunches it when he bats.
Yeah. Does he ever bowl with a heavy ball? Or?
No. Doesn't bowl with a heavy ball.
Why bother? And for me, the moment of the Big Bash this week came from everyone's just greatest. He'll soon be known as the greatest fielder of all time. I have no doubt about this. Jonty Rhodes can back off and pipe down. Chris Jordan took an absolute scorcher yet again. Four third scorchers.
which works on several different levels. I think I haven't seen it. I didn't watch that game. I've seen the highlights, but you don't get a brilliant angle of that catch. I've only kind of seen it from behind him.
Running around, diving, took it
two-handed. Did he?
Dived in and to the side, but like a goalkeeper save, but like on the boundary edge. And I think we the pinch hitter tweeted saying the stupid thing was that he was never going to drop it.
Yeah, I know.
So live with it, and that's just what he does.
He is in a league of his own, isn't he? As far as catching is concerned.
Yeah, I mean, it obviously would be going completely against the spirit of the game, but I wouldn't be adverse to seeing him in an England Test squad as a permanent 12th man.
There's a whole pod's worth of content there, isn't there?
There is.
Because he only takes absolute screamers. We've spoken before about the potential for a specialist fielding substitute.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would add loads to the game. And also, everyone loves a screamer. Everyone loves a highlights reel.
Absolutely.
But when you've got Joe Denley taking absolute worldies for England at mid-off, why bother?
He's you don't, I mean, Chris Jordan, he's played a few tests for England, hasn't he?
And then he became
the forgotten man.
Yeah.
But then he played in the T20s in New Zealand. He's in the social media era, these catches, he's doing the rounds of your franchise cricket. So I'm sure he's very, very much within touching distance of England's squad for the T20 in Australia in November of next year, I believe it is.
Yeah, I genuinely think his all-round game has got potential to be an absolute game changer for England, isn't it? He bats well. He definitely stays hit when he hits it.
Yeah.
Powerful lower order runs. Got such variation in his attack. Top whack, he's healthily quick. He'll get it up to 85, 86 miles an hour, which is plenty in a T20 game, especially on those decks in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
But he's got loads of variations. Bowls a great slur ball, great Yorker. Like I say, he catches pigeons in the field. He's got potential to be a T20 MVP in that World Cup if he stays fit, stays around. Is he 31 now? So he'd be,
he's 30. I think he's 30.
I know he's 31. He'll be 32, 33 by the time.
Probably if you add one, he'll be 32.
Yeah, depends on his birthday.
Potential
to be a big game changer.
Yeah,
I'm looking forward to it. And we wish him well as well. I've always thought he's one of those cricketers that just like to watch. He's good to watch. He's always got a great attitude. He's brought us Jofra Archer, which is the greatest gift to give.
Absolutely, good mates. And I think he even presented Jofra with his first test cap.
Lovely moment. It's
an absolutely beautiful moment. And I just for the record, I'd like to say that England as a test and ODI and T20 side do the presenting of caps far better than Australia do with the Bank Greens. So
absolutely,
it's not up for debate. So
have you spent any time ever thinking of who you would have liked to present you with your test cap?
Should you
make your debut?
Yeah, I'm not certainly not ruling it out yet.
Okay.
You look at your Adam Voges, who had a late arrival in the Test arena and scored banged a few centuries. So yeah. I'm not ruling it out. I haven't actually given it a great deal of thought. And so you've got to guess, I guess, a where you're going to be, because you know if I'd got a late call up for the New Zealand Test that had just gone by. Steve Finn might have been the only person available.
We love Steve Finn, but
great bloke. But maybe
who's lying awake at night hoping Steve Finn presents you with the test?
Exactly. I think for me, and we've talked about not going down rabbit warrens as often as we will. But for me, it has to be Gary Pratt.
Yeah, lovely.
Hand it to me, and then just give me a massive hug, and then
get back to his day job.
Yeah.
That's enough on rabbit warrens.
Rabbit warrens.
RWT Key would be presenting me with my test cap should I ever
Good
choose
man.
To make my debut
in
a home Ashes series. But
yep.
We kind of segued away from the baggy greens then, but do you want to talk about our favourite baggy green or our favourite resident of a baggy green. Where's Warnie? What's he up to this week? What's he been doing?
Oh, Shane, what's he been up to? He's had a great week, and we featured it a little bit in the pinch hitter as ever. We don't like to miss out on anything that he ever does or anywhere where he might ever be spotted. So there's a I'm not overly familiar with all the TV programs over in Australia, but there's a program called The Night Watchman. Or they're called the Night Watchmen, the presenters of a show on Fox, and they have started a campaign which is hashtag Get Warnie Knighted, and a little bit annoyed that I didn't come up with it first, but there was a very
we'll have it though. We'll take it. Have they put it on a podcast?
No, absolutely. We can take it further yeah. for them. And they've actually created a very good video, which is 45 seconds long. And if you go on Warnie's Twitter, at Shane Warne, you'll see that he not only retweeted and shared the video of Get Warnie Knighted, but he was laughing, as he loves to. Thanks so much, guys. Appreciate the petition support. Merry Christmas and see you during the Boxing Day test. So
and see you he will.
He will. He will.
Because if there's a camera there, Warnie will surely follow.
Absolutely. And I think obviously with Warnie being at the Boxing Day test and getting that little rabbit warren as well, is the MCG has suffered in recent years from being a bit of a flat track. Which would just make it perfect to have Warnie on commentary and not blame the track and blame the captains for not having an attacking field for delivering a poor entertainment for the paying spectators. Yeah, as Warnie loves to tell us, it's an entertainment sport. And people are here to be entertained. So
Warnie, he is an entertainer, and
he is on and off.
People pay their cable TV subscription, and they want more Warnie more of the time, whether or not they are actually paying to just watch a cricket match.
Exactly.
If
you don't have that cable subscription, as you called it, which it's always good to hear about cable, been a while, is just following on Twitter or just listen to the Pinch Hitter podcast, subscribe to the Pinch Hitter email, and we will keep you informed.
So that's where Warnie is. He's at the G, hunkering down for Boxing Day test. Is that right?
Absolutely, absolutely. Cool. Probably, and he'll be there. And that's all right. So Merry Christmas, Warnie, as ever.
Any update on how his latest business venture, Super Coach?
Do you know what? I downloaded the app for Super Coach about 5 or 6 weeks ago, and it's basically a fantasy league for the Big Bash. And I probably, looking back, should have shared that with you there and then, and we could have had a real go at it. So A, I'm kicking myself now. B, we'll have to make sure that we do it properly next year. So
I feel like there will be a Super Coach 100 version.
Oh, absolutely. Talking about Warnie and Supercoach and the 100, the 100, I am on their mailing list, I'm happy to say. Or slightly annoyed they haven't subscribed to the Pinch Hitter yet. I'm sure it's just a matter of time. They delivered some excellent content this week of Warnie basically having various things chucked at him, not physically, and him saying 100 or 0. And then he slightly went off a bit and started calling things 82, 96, things like that. And they did, in fact, chuck Steve Waugh at him at one point. And he said, great cricketer, but I wouldn't want to go for a meal with him. So no love lost there between Tugger and Warnie. I'll certainly tweet that out. Because
that feels like quality pinch hitter content. It's got everything we need.
It's great content. And the thing with the pinch hitter and Warnie is, I could, and the pinch hitter podcast, there's so much content out there. But I'll dig into it and post it so everyone can, as we like to say, climb into it.
Climb in. Right. So Warnie, tick.
Warnie, tick.
What are you going to do next?
Should we go to Safa, South Africa?
Let's do it. We'll have a quick review preview session. We'll talk a little bit about how England went in New Zealand, things we want to see them improve on in South Africa, talk a little bit about the selection we expect to see. A lot of flu-like symptoms we hear floating around the England squad. So selection's a bit up in the air. Craig Overton, Don Bess obviously called up into the squad this week, which I think is great. I'm a big fan of both of those players. Love to see Don Bess. Somerset invasion, indeed. Syderabad on tour. A bit of breaking news from the camp. I don't know if you've seen this. I've only just kind of seen it since we've been chatting.
Ben Stokes,
yeah, not training with England on Tuesday. His dad's been admitted to hospital in South Africa.
Well, we wish him well.
He's suffering a serious illness. Yeah, wish him well. Fingers crossed for Stokesy. Obviously, critical part of the England side. He's with his dad in hospital at the moment. So signs are probably at the moment sounds like he's not gonna play.
And if he doesn't play, what happens there then? The squad you've got replacements like for likes everywhere. There's definitely a like for like Stokes, isn't there? Someone who can smash a 250 in South Africa and take catches everywhere.
Yeah, well, Ben makes things happen, Stokes.
Mm-hmm.
I think the likest for like replacement is Sam makes things happen, Curran.
Mm-hmm.
Still not quite sure what happens to him, how he started to bounce side. I think the big news from the New Zealand tour was going into that, just how much better balanced England looked. We spoke about a little bit about this on the last episode with that kind of solid top three, the powerhouse middle order, Curran at eight, Butler keeping wicket, and then the pace attack with Jack Leach being a kind of spinner that can do various different things. That you bring Jimmy Anderson back into that, as he looks like he's going to play again
Jimmy.
In South Africa.
He's my favourite.
He is my favourite. The perfect combination of dry sense of humour, rugged handsomeness, and world-class swing bowling. What more could you ask for?
What more could you want in anyone?
Yeah, on Boxing Day or any other day. It looks like he's going to be coming back. So we've kind of spoken about that. Kind of throws the balance of the team a little bit out of kilter. Likelihood is that he has to come back in for Sam Curran. Which means Sam Curran could come in for Stokes. I certainly feel like Curran could bat in the top six pretty comfortably. And then that kind of bounces the side a little bit better.
Yeah, definitely does. And the problem with bringing Jimmy back in, which there's no question about happening, providing he's fit, is the potential long tail if Broad, Leach, Archer, etc., and Jimmy are all playing in the same team, albeit Broad, Leach, and Archer have had flu-like symptoms. I'm sure we'll climb into that a little bit later. But I did get into a little bit of a discussion on Twitter earlier this week with someone claiming that he felt that all those four bowlers, there was an argument to be made for them batting at number eight.
All four of them.
Yeah, I mean that was where I took issue with him.
So we're saying that Jimmy Anderson is a Test match number eight.
Absolutely.
Well, absolutely. Won't find a bigger Jimmy Anderson fan than I. Test match best of 83-84.
Yep.
In one of my favourite test match partnerships of all time, against India a couple of years ago.
Yep.
He's not batting eight. He's not batting eight in a test match, though. I think Broadie's is in this kind of unique position of having taken 480 odd test wickets at 28 and still having his batting thrown at him as not being good enough.
Which you take really personally, don't you?
I do take great exception to that.
And I, as I said in the previous pod, he walks out to bat, and he may as well not have a bat half the time. When he connects, he's very good. But I do very much feel he comes out with the belief that others should have made the runs, which is fair enough. And I don't want to knock him for his batting. The slight frustration is the fact that he used to be far better. at it, but I'm sure you will fight to the bitter end for Brodie.
My main, and I will end this here. We don't need more Brodie content. There is plenty more of that to come in future episodes. Whatever he does it with gusto and a side of great comedy. Mm-hmm. The celeb appeal he brought us, the smashing it to second slip via Brad Iron Gloves Haddin's glove.
Yeah, it's not his fault that Haddin couldn't catch it.
It's not his fault that he didn't walk. No. He's a right one for a tweet about Australians not walking.
Mm-hmm.
And he comes out swinging. He's not for hanging around. But yeah, he's not got the technique, the mindset. And I think basically he just can't be asked to bat at number 8 in a test match anymore.
No.
And I, for one, applaud that because I certainly can't be asked to bat at number 8 in a test match.
No. So definitely don't do it. I know we're going to be talking about kind of the decade that's come. This could be a nice little segue, but kind of go into a bit of both here. So I think it'd be great to get from you let's say that Stokes can't play, for example, on Boxing Day. I'd love to get your England 11. But before you do, do you know what the England 11 was for their first test match of this decade?
So that would have been, if I'm right, the New Year's test in Sydney in that Ashes series 10-11.
Keep going. No.
Is that right?
No, you're bang wrong.
That's 10-11, not 9-10.
That would have been 10-11, yeah. So that would have been 2011. So 2009-10, back in South Africa.
Absolutely.
Team were in Cape Town. So
let's have a go. That would have been Strauss, Cook.
Captain, yeah.
Top of the order. Jonathan Trott, I suspect, had just moved to 3.
Trotty at 3. That's what we said, wasn't it?
Yeah. KP at 4.
Good bloke.
Ian Bell at 5. Collingwood at 6.
Mm-hmm.
Your good friend, Matty Pryor at 7.
Good bloke.
Bloody good bloke.
Mm-hmm.
Swanee at 8. Had a fantastic mm-hmm. series with a bat, I remember, in that series. 9, probably Brodie.
Probably Brodie, yeah. I mean, you probably think he should have been batting at 5. But
I would have had him at 3, first drop, mm-hmm. man for the big occasion.
Mm-hmm.
Brodie at 9, where am I? Graham Onions played in that series. Because
mm-hmm.
he had a fantastic partnership, didn't he, with Collingwood. Was that him?
Mm-hmm.
And he batted out for the draw. So who am I missing? Number 10. Your good friend Jimmy Anderson, I'm assuming.
Yeah, you've got all 11 there. Just got
the first year of the decade wrong, but managed to remember England's entire test lineup.
You've flown to Sydney, which is fine. So you're right, Trott was at 3. I think Collingwood batted at 5. I don't know if this was just for one test. Collingwood was at 5, Bell was 6. Broad was actually at 8.
Was he ahead of Swanee?
Yeah, Swan 9, Anderson 10.
That was probably the series, you know. That was probably the series where they swapped, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That was probably the kind of final decline of Brodie's batting.
May well have been. May well
and have Swan,
been.
Swan being on the rise. So it always feels like a natural position for a spinner, doesn't it? Number 8. Yeah. Can't hold a bat.
Well, Warnie, for starters. Exactly. So certainly should be. So that was England's first test this decade.
And going into the last test.
Well, yeah, I mean, let's chuck the question at you again. Where is England's final test of this decade going to be?
Selection-wise or the actual test?
Let's go with where, first of all.
Is that Centurion?
It is, against?
Against South Africa.
Excellent, yeah.
Play starts 8 o'clock on Boxing Day.
8 a.m., correct.
Which means we get a good 6-7 hours up to 3 o'clock. Right before the Premier League games kick off, all available on Amazon Prime, and in-laws will be asleep by then. and I'll have been watching an entire Test match all day. Can't wait.
Well, you've obviously got the option of starting at 11:30 on Christmas night of the G, Australia against New Zealand, and then you've got the slightly annoying. There's not a crossover between, you know, between maybe a seven a.m. start in the Big Bash would be nice.
Yeah,
we've got the Perth Scorchers against Sydney Sixers at 8:10. But yeah, England 8 a.m. Quick FYI, ladies and gentlemen, there is no TMS, so they are doing the sports social or whatever they call it, cricket social. But the live commentary will be on TalkSport.
I'm a big fan of the TalkSport coverage, actually.
KP's going to be on there.
Is he?
I think
looking
Butch,
forward to seeing how he goes.
Your good friend Mark Butcher's going to be chairing it. Don't know if he's going to bring his guitar. And he's obviously,
his guitar goes everywhere with him these days.
He does. He's a musician. Musician.
He went home to get it.
He did, and he's taken it with him to South Africa. Yeah, so the England 11. What are you going for, Tree?
Right. So, Burns and Sibley look pretty inked in. Sibley, a couple of question marks on him coming out of that New Zealand series. Technically, he's a little bit kind of side on, a little bit awkward. Never has being an ugly cricketer been more in fashion.
And
thanks
a,
to your good,
a,
friend,
a pod,
your good friend Steve Smith.
There's a pod in there in itself, but we're not
yeah.
There.
But he gets South Africa clearly on sheer weight of runs in the championship. And I would have no question over his place inside. Joe Denley continues at three for me. Dependable Denley is a moniker that we're trying to push for on
the
podcast.
It's getting traction. It's getting traction. It's going to get there.
Dependably Denley. He bats at three. He gives us that solidity. I think we all know that he is a bit of a sticking plaster in there, but he scored 100 in the warm-up. He's technically correct. He bats time. He gets bowlers into their second spells. It's unfashionable, but he's doing exactly what we need at the moment. Joe Root bats four off the back of that big double 100 in New Zealand. He carries on at four. Ben Stokes feels a little bit too high at five for me, but I think while we're giving Ollie Pope that protection at six, Stokes feels about right there. I personally think banging him in the top five long term changes his game a little bit too much. If you're batting a number five, your job is still to go out there and score 250 if you can. It's still to bat big and bat long. I feel like Stokes is better if you just let him play the game how he sees he wants to play it, if it's to go out there and score quickly and get a quick 80 odd. That's the best way to use him, is to just let him play his natural game.
Very much Michael Vaughan instructions there, isn't it? Just go out and just don't overcomplicate it. Just go out and play your natural game, mate.
That is his Michael Vaughan's exclusive feedback to all players is just play your natural game, mate.
Absolutely.
and it will always be his feedback.
Yeah.
Which I think is okay feedback if you are captaining England's greatest ever side and England's greatest ever bowling attack.
Yeah.
If you're captaining a side full of 21-year-olds, not the best, not the most supportive feedback. But yeah, I do feel like Stokes being an exception to my thoughts on this. I do think just let him go out and play his natural game, put him in the engine room at six, let him bat, let him bowl, let him field, let him do everything at 100
miles
an hour.
Yeah.
Take the brakes off a little bit. But while we've got Ollie Pope in there at six, I think Stokes at fives gives him that little bit of extra protection. I think long term we'd like to see Ollie Pope in the top five, wouldn't we?
We all would. Yeah.
Massive prospect. But yeah, for the time being, Stokes at five, Pope at six. Looking forward to seeing how Ollie Pope goes. Taking the shackles off a little bit, aren't we? Had to keep wicketing in New Zealand unexpectedly, just as it felt like his time had come in the side. I feel like he got held back a little bit there by the gloves. But batted well, batted nicely. Put in a good knock in the second innings of the second test, I think.
Well done, Ollie Pope.
So yeah, looking forward to see how he goes and starts to get his teeth into a four match series. Joss Butler continues at seven with the gloves, and the less said about that, the better.
That's fine.
Needs a big series for me, Joss Butler. Ben Folks is breathing down his neck. Ben Folks feels like the natural successor to that number seven spot with the gloves, and it felt like when if you're dropping Johnny Bairstow after the Ashes, that was the right time to give it to him. But Joss Butler's a wonderful cricketer. We love him.
We talk about cabs off the rank, don't we? And
yeah.
And you've obviously got your Butler with the gloves. You've got your best, those on the tour. Ollie Pope took the gloves in the last game. So, folks, I think this particular rank, he's not the next cab off the rank. However, and we do talk about horses for courses, and we will talk about a whole podcast of horses for courses, I have no doubt that he may well be not only the next cab off the rank, but the cab in play when we get to Sri Lanka. So if I were you, I'd just let it drop, folks, for now.
Okay. Consider him dropped. Sam Curran at 8.
Curran 8. Ooh, Curran 8.
Doing Curran 8? No, I'm not. I'm putting Archer at 8.
Okay.
Archer at 8. Leechy at 9.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of talk about whether we're going to go in without a spinner. I feel like and I read a really nice article about this online the other day about how the franchise format has never made it into 5-day cricket or into Red Bull cricket. But if it did, and there was a draft, every single side picking 11 players would pick a quality spinner to go into a test match with.
Yeah.
And I completely agree.
Mm-hmm.
Leach can do multiple different jobs. He can hold, he can attack. Yeah, he can get the most out of a flat deck. He can keep you in it on an absolute turner. I'd always go in with a spinner, and I think Leach is a really good example of that.
And he's one of those players, he's a bit like an impact sub. Like when he comes out to bat, if England are in the hole, if England are going well, it lifts the crowd.
Yeah.
If it's gonna turn, he's a shoo-in.
Yeah. I think he needs to, I really want to see him move away from this kind of cult hero status that he's got.
Yeah.
I want to see him become genuine, no holds barred, unadulterated hero. I feel like once the glasses, the bald head, the kind of comically awful batting style, if not kind of effectiveness, always kind of pigeonholes him as a bit of a cult hero. The tash in the ashes didn't help him either.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to seeing him shed that and just become, like I said, no holds barred.
So I guess what you're saying is you don't want the Jack Leach channel to become a thing on Twitter in a few years' time. You want him to be known for his actual cricketing prowess.
As we want to see to
going into a gym and doing some reps.
Yeah, we want to see. We don't want to see him out canvassing. No. We don't want to see him urinating on bouncers in Brighton.
No,
we don't want to see him. We don't want to see him pumping iron.
Nah.
And we don't want to see him pushing farm shops from his Twitter.
Absolutely not. So Leach is at nine.
And then the big two, Brodie and Jimmy, 10, 11, sort of picks itself. I feel like Archer's a little bit high at 8, and it does kind of depend on what happens with Ben Stokes. I think a really interesting prospect is Dom Bess. Had a up and down season. Boldwell spent some time out on loan at Yorkshire. Had a couple of difficult spells, I think. But he's a spinner who averages 28 in first class cricket. And we've seen that he can bat. He has potential to be that genuine. We spoke about Swanee earlier, that genuine kind of number 8 spinner.
Mm-hmm.
And that would balance the side really well, because I think that's what we lack with Leach is that balance to the side once Jimmy Anderson comes back, like we kicked off the pod with. But yeah, so last test side of the decade for me. I'll just run through it to recap. We've got Burns, Sidley, Denley,
mm-hmm.
Root, Stokes at 5, Pope, Joss Butler, Jofra Archer at 8, Leach at 9, and then Brodie and Jimmy 10 and 11.
Perfect.
Looking forward to it. Can't wait.
Perfect. Bring on 8 a.m. On Boxing Day. Obviously, I have a good Christmas first, but 8 a.m. on Boxing Day will be a lot of fun for all cricket lovers out there. So yeah, let's have a bit more of a look back on the decade that still just about is. For me personally, it's been a beautiful decade, because this has been the first decade that I've started it and ending it knowing you. So, yeah, I look back at the noughties, I was missing something. Look back at the 90s, I was missing something as well. And the years in the 80s, I was there as well. So just a nice little touching moment between the two of us there.
It feels fitting that we're going to round off the end of a cricketing decade by looking at some of the best performances, some of our favourite performances of the decade.
Absolutely.
The first decade that we've ever shared as cricket fans. We met
from beginning to end. So
yeah. we met down in West Indies in 2009, that series.
Oh, 9, absolutely.
Yeah.
09. Those are the heady days.
Heady days.
So take us through. Let's have a look at the decade. What have you got for us, Trey?
Right. So every man and his dog has picked their eleven of the decade. Whether that's the England 11, the World 11, Test 11, ODI 11.
And well done. And well done.
And well done to them. It's great content. Mm. You'll get to know fairly quickly that the pinch hitter loves a selection debate. Mm-hmm. But I think every team has had a slightly nuanced decade, haven't they? I mean, Zimbabwe have had a very up and down decade. They've only managed to play 33 tests, but it's been a massive decade for them. Mm-hmm. Ireland and Afghanistan had beautiful moments making their first test appearances.
Beautiful.
At the back end of this decade. So we're not going to pick a team of the decade. We're going to go through team by team, talk about some of the performances and pick our player of the decade from each team, and give everyone their moment in the spotlight.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think it's a lovely thing because we very, very easily forget about other countries, even test playing countries who aren't playing England. So let's do that. Who are you kicking us off with, Trey?
Right, well, so that's a lovely segue into me kicking us off with England. Test player of the decade, there's been some fantastic performances for England. It's been an up and down decade, which I think is true for a lot of countries, but probably none more so than England. Started off as the best test side in the world, or on a journey to being the best test side in the world.
Where was the first test of the decade?
First test of the decade, South Africa.
Mm-hmm. Good.
First test, second year of the decade, mm-hmm. Sydney.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, up and down decade performances of note. Cook down in Australia, 766 runs in the Ashes series.
If you're counting,
and we are. Mm-hmm. Really memorable performances. Stokes in South Africa last time out, 258. We've really seen him kind of develop into a genuinely world class cricketer. People forget he made his debut for England in 2011, so he has been around for the majority of the decade, but it really feels like the last kind of 3 or 4 years, he's blossomed into the real deal.
Again, to use a Michael Vaughan quote. Sorry, carry on.
It's also seen the kind of moving on of a few of England greats. KP mm-hmm. was around at the start of the decade, kind of a genuine game changer for England. Took us into the 21st century, didn't he? KP, Ian Bell has moved on. Fred didn't make it into this decade. I've gone for Jimmy. Jimmy Anderson, 37 years young.
Mm-hmm.
He had an up and down career. He came in when he was 21 back in 2003. And then in 2008, there was that changing of the guard down in New Zealand, wasn't there? Him and Brodie kind of came into the attack for Hoggard and Harmison, when it felt like a kind of line in the sand.
Hoggard completely binned off, never to be seen again. Harmison, just kind of we grey-aired it a bit for a couple of years, but
He was playing in that series down in the West Indies where we met. Mm-hmm. I think hoping to kind of relive some former glory of his 7-for-12 at Sabina Park, which never quite materialised. But yeah, so Jimmy, just some quick stats on Jimmy. He runs 40 kilometres a test. He's about to play his 150th test this week.
Mm-hmm.
I'm citing Tim Wigmore here. He's written a fantastic article on Jimmy in the Telegraph,
mm-hmm.
Which is worth checking out. He's bowled 32,359 balls, which is 2,000 more than any other seamer.
This decade.
This full stop. And he's played 16 more tests, or he's about to play his 150th test, which will be 16 more than any other quick. And this decade is about that longevity, isn't it? He came onto the scene as the next young thing with his red mohawk. And he's kind of matured into the very antithesis of what it was when he started, isn't he? He's Mr. Dependable. He's getting better and better. He's been at the heartbeat. He was the heartbeat of that England side, or the leading attack leader in that England side that got to number one back in 2012.
He's just great, as we said earlier.
He's just great.
He's just great, and I was he's if you know, I'm sure he will, injury permitting, if he plays next decade, he'll become him and Stuart Broad will both have played Test matches for England in 3 decades, which is no mean feat. And I was there for his international debut in 2002 at the MCG in a triangular series between our good friends Australia and Sri Lanka. And he didn't even have a name and number on the back of his shirt. He was drafted in from
how old was he? He would have been 19, 20 then,
something like that. Yeah, but and to think he's still going now. I mean that England team had, you know, Alex Stewart was playing in it, so he's, you know, talk about spanning the eras. He's done very well, and just to return to that previous stat that Stuart Broad and Jimmy Anderson will become the first England players since Michael Atherton to play Test cricket for England over 3 decades.
Fantastic. And I'm just going to pull up the stats actually. For his performances this decade, because his numbers are impressive no matter which way you look at it. Mm-hmm. But like I say, he's matured into this kind of attack leader.
Just a fine wine, isn't
just
it?
He is an absolute fine wine. But stats-wise this decade, 419 wickets, bang on 24 from 103 test matches. That number's interesting, actually. He played 46 test matches up to 2008. He was 26, 27 coming into the decade. And he was averaging mid-30s, I think, at that point when they kind of invested in him as that attack leader. Yeah. And his career since then, that 103 tests... 419 wickets at 24 is, that would put him as England's highest all-time wicket taker.
Yeah,
without the first 46 tests of his career. Yeah,
where they were trying to change his action, where they were telling him that he's going to have back problems the rest of his life and things like that. So that's a very good point.
World class. With all the trials and tribulations England have had over the kind of second half of this decade, he's been there throughout, hasn't he? Performances at home, away.
Yeah, and I think somewhere where he doesn't, he kind of, those numbers don't even, well, those numbers are great and they do tell a story, but one of the stories they don't tell is the tours to Australia where we've not done so well, or some of the tours in the subcontinent where he's just bowling and keeping it so tight. Yeah. And it's not his fault that the England batting team have done awfully, so he was actually bowling earlier that day already as well.
Yeah.
He's transitioned. Not from a male to a female, but he's transitioned from a young
duckling
lad
to a swan.
Yeah, he's transitioned from a young lad who you know is bowling these incredible swinging deliveries to someone who can just kind of do it all.
I think one of my kind of least favourite sights in cricket over the course of this decade was George Bailey absolutely taking him to task. Was it in Adelaide?
I don't like George Bailey.
I don't awful, like him one little bit.
Awful man.
And I didn't like seeing him take Jimmy to task. I didn't like seeing him planting him in the stands back in Adelaide when Jimmy was bowling. I think I'm right in saying he was bowling on his third successive day of the Test match. England's absolute Rolls Royce fast bowler getting used as a kind of giving throwdowns to George Bailey.
Yeah, and There's quite a few good stats around George Bailey, and he's actually just about to become Australia's Test selector when the BBL is finished.
He'll be selecting George Bailey. That's the only other
absolutely
way I can see him getting selected.
I will not share any of those stats on his career, and that's it.
We'll just put a link in the email.
Yeah.
Right. So England done. Australia next. Special mentions to George Bailey. Mm. You've obviously got your Ashton Agars.
Yep.
Back at the start of the decade, there was your Xavier Dohertys. You've got your Michael Beers. Big names. Good
spinners.
Good spinners. They're just good spinners. Mm. Your big names. None of them make it. You'll be surprised to hear.
What about Doug the Rug? Is Doug the Rug?
Doug the Rug. Did he sneak into this decade, Doug the Rug?
He definitely played in 2010-11.
Did he?
He definitely played. You keep talking. I'll check that one out.
Okay, cool. Well, it's not Doug the Rug. You can answer this question kind of two ways, couldn't you? And I've answered it much as we don't like to give Aussies too much credit on the podcast. You can answer this in two ways. The decade could be remembered as the one that Steve Smith kind of came of age and turned himself into the second best batsman of all time, statistically.
As much as we hate to say
it. As much as it pains us to say it, his transformation this decade from spiky-haired, Shane Warne light leg spinner.
Well, he was called up initially to, and I may have got this quote not spot on, but I think I've got it spot on, to tell a few funnies around the dressing room.
Really?
Yeah, and it was during the 2010-11 Ashes tour, and Australia doing so badly. Like, let's chuck this guy in. He's got a smiley face, and he'll bowl some rank spinners, and he'll bat awfully. But he might keep the energy up.
Yeah, and it turns out he kept the energy up by becoming genuinely world class batter, which no one saw coming.
Just ridiculous. I'd like to go on record now and say that I think Don Bess could follow a very similar career trajectory.
And we can but hope.
The Christmas Eve podcast of 2029, which I for one am looking forward to. We'll see Don Bess as the England player of the decade.
We can but hope.
And I'd just like also to put on record that Doug the Rug, his final Test match was Australia v England at Adelaide, December the 3rd to the 7th, 2010.
Lovely stuff. How did you get on?
They went down. They went down that day. Although
did they?
If they'd held out a little bit longer, the rain came down as well. They didn't quite do it. A lot of credit to KP for getting caught the night before, so there wasn't that many wickets England needed the next day.
Yeah. How good was that series? Right. That's another podcast.
A review of
the 2010-11 Ashes.
Yeah, I think we'll probably call it a review of great England overseas Test series, and then it will just talk about that.
It'll just talk about that one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just a little bit on Steve Smith.
Smudger.
This decade, in terms of the top three leading run scorers in a series.
Did they all start off as part-time spinners to tell a few funnies?
Did Alistair Cook start off as a part-time spinner to tell a few funnies?
No, see him up, mate.
Then no. You've got Alistair Cook, 7-6-6. Runs at an average of 127 in that Ashes 10-11. You've then got Steve Smith, 7-6-9. In 2014-15,
he just beat Cook, did he?
He's beaten by 3 runs.
That is really annoying.
Which is incredibly frustrating.
Yeah.
At an average of 128.
That's ruined my Christmas.
Yeah, well, wait till I ruin it a little bit further. The highest highest number of runs of the decade in a series was Steve Smith, the Ashes, Australia and England, this year, 774. So he's added another 5.
He didn't even play in one Test match.
He didn't even play, exactly. We literally resorted to trying to kill him, and he still scored 774 runs. So for me, having the two highest scores, two tie series aggregates, in a decade, which you write up there. I would just, and we're going down a slight rabbit warren here, but perfect. If you look at the most runs in a series ever, first you got Bradman in that Ashes when he scored about a million. Then you got Wally Hammond. Third on that list is Manus Labuschagne with a series being called the ICC World Test Championship.
Well, that's one big series, isn't it?
Yeah. As far as Quick Info are concerned, it's one big series, and he scored 893 runs in it from seven tests.
And didn't he didn't even start the series playing, did he? For the Aussies.
No.
He was Smudge's replacement at Lords.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he Glamorgan have produced a genuinely world class Test match number three.
And they've got a lot of explaining to do.
I'm just checking. We've gone. Sorry, we're going to have to edit this
out. I
was
expecting that to cut off as well.
Yeah, I was, but it hasn't. Anyway, carry on.
Shall we hit pause briefly? Let's do that.
Yeah, do you want me to hit finish? Are you going to hit finish record? Yeah.